Days of Our Lives. This is Jean Bruce Scott congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.
Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elba Man, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the Book of the Month.
This month's book is Skipping Christmas by John Grisham. John Grisham is best known for his legal thrillers, books written from the point of view of a lawyer and examining how the justice system works after most crime novels end. Skipping Christmas, published in 2001, is his first departure from this hugely successful format, but it rapidly became a bestseller and has been recently reissued in a new paperback edition. Set in a small suburb in America, the book tells the story of Luther Crank, an ordinary middle-class family man who wants to opt out of the financial and social frenzy of a commercial Christmas. With his daughter away from home for the first time, he persuades his wife Nora to spend their usual Christmas budget on 10 days cruising in the Caribbean. Nora is a little less convinced by the idea, but the pair make plans, inform their friends and neighbours, and even go on a diet in anticipation of the holiday. Unfortunately, many of their colleagues view the idea as almost sacrilegious and apply pressure on the couple in an effort to make them conform.
Luther's morning routine hadn't changed in the 18 years he'd lived on Hemlock. Up at 6, slippers and bathrobe, brew the coffee, out the garage door, down the driveway where Milton the paperboy had left the Gazette an hour earlier. Luther could count the steps from the coffee pot to the newspaper, knowing they wouldn't vary by 2 or 3. Back inside, a cup with just a trace of cream, the sports section, then Metro, business, and always last, the national and international news. Halfway through the obituaries, he would take a cup of coffee, the same lavender cup every day, with 2 sugars, to his dear wife. On the morning after the carolling party on his front lawn, Luther shuffled half asleep down his drive and was about to pick up the Gazette when he saw a bright collection of colours out of the corner of his left eye. There was a sign in the centre of his lawn. "Free Frosty," the damn thing proclaimed in bold black letters. It was on white poster board, reds and greens around the borders, with a sketch of Frosty chained and shackled somewhere in a basement. No doubt the Crank's basement. It was either a bad design by an adult with too much time to spare, or a rather good design by a kid with a mom looking over his shoulder. Luther suddenly felt eyes watching him. Lots of eyes. So he casually stuck the Gazette under his arm and strolled back into the house as if he'd seen nothing. He grumbled as he poured his coffee, cursed mildly as he took his chair. He couldn't enjoy sports or Metro. Even the obituaries couldn't hold his attention. Then he realised that Nora should not see the poster. She'd worry about it much more than he did. With each new assault on his right to do as he pleased, Luther was more determined to ignore Christmas. He was concerned about Nora, though. He would never break, but he feared she would. If she believed the neighbourhood children were now protesting, she just might collapse. He struck quickly, slinking through the garage, cutting round the corner, high-stepping across the lawn because the grass was wet and practically frozen, yanking the poster from the ground and tossing it into the utility room where he'd deal with it later. He took Nora her coffee, then settled once again at the kitchen table where he tried in vain to concentrate on the Gazette. He was angry, though, and his feet were frozen. Luther drove to work. He had once advocated closing the office from the middle of December until after January the 1st. No one works anyway, he'd argued rather brilliantly at a firm meeting. The secretaries needed to shop, so they left for lunch early, returned late, then left an hour later to run errands. Simply make everyone take their vacations in December, he had said forcefully. Sort of a 2-week layoff, with pay, of course. Billings were down anyway, he had explained, with charts and graphs to back him up. Their clients certainly weren't in their offices, so no item of business could ever be finalised until the first week of January. Wiley and Beck could save a few bucks by avoiding the Christmas dinner and the office party. He'd even passed out an article from the Wall Street Journal about a big firm in Seattle that had adopted such a policy, with outstanding results. Or so said the journal.
The picture the book paints shows modern Christmas at its worst. Rampant consumerism, social expectations, and a blind determination to force conformity on anyone with a different viewpoint all play a part in what becomes some rather unpleasant bullying of the cranks. Luther begins by trying to placate disappointing groups who expect him to buy seasonal items and don't see why he should refuse this year. But his offers of donations for events at a later date are met with blank incomprehension. When he turns away the carol singers, the entire street comes out to sing on his lawn for several hours. Grisham certainly understands the pressure to conform and paints a gruesome picture of what should be a joyful and peaceful time. Like most of Grisham's early novels, this story has something of a happy ending, and it can be read as a modern fable. Its weakness is perhaps in the final message, which is a little confusing. It is hard to decide whether we should applaud Luther's final actions or be disappointed. Likewise, the neighbours, friends and colleagues, who are his adversaries for most of the story, become heartwarmingly kind and good at the end. I'm not sure if this is enough to make up for all that has gone before, and perhaps the story is a warning about the dangers of nonconformity and how quickly a mob mentality can overtake even those we think we know well.
A Hemlock Frosty came in four sections. A wide round base, a slightly smaller snowball that wedged into the base, then a trunk, then the head with the face and hat. Each section could be stuffed into the next larger one, so that storage for the other 11 months of the year was not too demanding. At a cost of $82.99 plus shipping, everyone packed away their Frosties with care. And they unpacked them with great delight. Throughout the afternoon, sections of Frosties could be seen inside most garages along Hemlock as the snowmen were dusted off and checked for parts. Then they were put together, built just like a real snowman, section on top of section, until they were 7 feet tall and ready for the roof. Installation was not a simple matter. A ladder and a rope were required, along with the help of a neighbour. First, the roof had to be scaled with a rope around the waist. Then Frosty, who was made of hard plastic and weighed about 40 pounds, was hoisted up very carefully so as not to scratch him over the asphalt shingles. When Frosty reached the summit, he was strapped to the chimney with a canvas band that Vic Frohmeyer had invented himself. A 200-watt lamp was screwed into Frosty's innards, and an extension cord was dropped from the backside of the roof. Wes Trockton was an insurance broker who'd called in sick so he could surprise his kids by having their Frosty up first. He and his wife Trish washed their snowman just after lunch, then, under her close supervision, Wes climbed and grappled and adjusted until the task was complete. 40 feet high, with a splendid view, he looked up and down Hemlock and was quite smug that he had got the jump on everyone, including Frohmeyer. While Trish made hot cocoa, Wes began hauling boxes of lights up from the basement to the driveway, where he laid them out and checked circuits. No one on Hemlock strung more Christmas lights than the Trogdons. They lined their yard, wrapped their shrubs, draped their trees, outlined their house, adorned their windows, 14,000 lights the year before. Frohmeyer left work early so he could supervise matters on Hemlock, and he was quite pleased to see activity. He was momentarily jealous that Trogdon had beaten him to the punch, but what did it really matter? Before long, they joined forces in the doorway of Mrs. Ellen Mulholland, a lovely widow who was already baking brownies. Her Frosty was up in a flash, her brownies devoured, and they were off to render more assistance. Kids joined them, including Spike Frohmeyer, a 12-year-old with his father's flair for organisation and community activism. And they went door-to-door in the late afternoon, hurrying before darkness slowed them.
This is only a short book, more of a novella, really, but it is as well-paced as any of Grisham's legal thrillers, and extremely funny in places. Whilst I was enjoying the tale over one Christmas, I found myself intensely grateful the Christmas madness has not reached such ludicrous proportions yet in Britain. Now I look out of the window, and I wonder how much longer our relative peace will last. So perhaps we should read this book as a cautionary tale.
Here are some handy tips and information regarding your hospital bedside TV, radio and phone service. TV channels 1 to 5 are free to use at certain times every day, so check your screen for details. To help you keep in touch with friends and loved ones, outgoing calls are also free all day, every day, to landline numbers that begin with 01, 02 or 03. Radio channels can be listened to absolutely free at any time of day. If you would like to access a paid service, such as our wide range of TV channels, Sky Sports, our great range of films, or just need a little internet access, then you'll need to buy a bundle. Buying a longer stay bundle would give you the best value for money, so try to buy a bundle to suit your maximum length of stay. If you pay for a TV service with your debit or credit card and happen to leave the hospital earlier than expected, then just contact our customer care team from your bedside phone. They may be able to downgrade your bundle to a shorter duration and give you a partial refund. To find out more about bedside entertainment services and find a bundle to suit your needs, just pick up the bedside phone and speak to the friendly Hospedia customer care team. They'll help you find the best deal. And remember, to contact Hospital Radio, just pick up the phone and dial star 800.
Offering prestigious accommodation, ensuite facilities and high-quality care for residents provided 24/7 by qualified nurses and carers, Roseville Care Centre provides the perfect home for its residents' emotional, spiritual, social, physical and intellectual needs. A purpose-built residential care facility in the heart of Ingleby Barwick, Roseville is a care centre which provides facilities to accommodate elderly residential and nursing service users, offering both short and long stay accommodation, as well as respite and daycare. To find out more, please telephone 01642 30 81 88 or visit our website, rosevillecarecentre.com. Roseville Care Centre.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard.
And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
Parkville is a purpose-built residential care centre situated at the heart of Middlesbrough and providing personalised care in a modern and homely environment. Parkville aims to help older people to continue to live independent and active lives within the wider community whilst benefiting from the care and support of an experienced and dedicated team of nursing and care staff. At Parkville, we provide facilities to accommodate residential elderly and residential EMI service users. To find out more, please telephone 01642 223334. That's 01642 223334. Parkville Care Centre. Care to call us home.
We'll be right back. 100,000 strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 225
grams of magnesium, 1 tablespoon.
Remember, any more than 1 tablespoon could kill you. Any less than 1 tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
and
the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if
damn.
You would like a more simple solution, oh, then right. You can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondents from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
Splendid. Okay, moving on. It's the Book of the Month, and we have not one, not two, but three fabulous folk in the studio. We've been joined once again by Rob Nichols. Rob, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Excellent. We've got Heather Errington with us. Heather, your first ever Book of the Month, so an important period from that perspective. You've read some of Jenny's authentic work that she's put together with the Drowners.
I have.
You also tuned into a Book of the Month podcast, which is really great, which was, of course, the one that we did on Saturday night and Sunday morning.
Love that
so,
as well.
Great stuff on that. And now you are almost a fully fledged Southside midweek driver, so etc. Wonderful. And of course we have Jenny Finch as well, who we just heard delivering another perceptive series of comments on Skipping Christmas by John Grisham. Rob, your thoughts on the number one bestseller, Skipping Christmas?
Yes, I enjoyed it. It was funny. It sort of reminded me of those that series of books, Wilt, things like that. You know, where everything unravels, and it's an easy read, isn't it? And it's interesting insight into I'm sure obviously it's a parody, but insight into the pressures of Christmas in America style.
Although
suburban.
I have seen Frosty the Snowman appearing in houses, even in Teesside.
Yeah. I don't think there's the same sort of sort of street, the intensity of the street rivalry and everything like that. Well, maybe there is. Maybe I'm missing out.
It could actually happen. I don't know. Missing
maybe
out.
People are pointing fingers at my house even now.
Fear of missing out. It's a bizarre routine because it does certainly critique the contemporary culture that we've actually got. I mean, Heather, from what you've been able to access in terms of the whole thing, what does it sort of say to you about the whole sort of? I mean, is it like when you were in Manchester?
In Manchester, in regards to what, Christmas decorations?
Exactly, yes. Or did you never stay in Manchester for Christmas?
I did. I was there Christmas Eve. However, I didn't put anything. I didn't put Frosty on my roof. I just had a little artificial tree in my bedroom. But as Rob said, I got the intensity of. I think more so in America, I think it is a bigger thing, from what I've read up as well.
And yet I was always under the impression that Thanksgiving was their major event, and Christmas was, well, it happened, it was another way of actually keeping the capitalist system working. Sorry.
I think Christmas over there is just as big as here, but I think there is various houses here that have covered in lights.
And of course we've got Christmas on East Coast America, Christmas in Middle America, Christmas in Los Angeles, where you have artificial snow and all sorts of other areas there. I mean, it did strike me very much as John Grisham writing as Richard Curtis, if I'm being honest. You could almost imagine the soundtrack and Hugh Grant, you know, channeling his inner sort of self to actually take on board the role of Luther Crank, with possibly Emma Thompson as Nora Crank, if I was looking through that. What surprised me is I'm so used to John Grisham being a thriller writer that this threw me completely, because I spent the first sort of, well, 60 pages thinking, well, who's going to get murdered? You know, where's the issue here?
Frosty.
Where's... Clearly, exactly. You're going to spoil her away, Heather. I don't think we can cope with that. In terms of the actual piece itself, would you say it's a good antidote to this kind of, you know, as Jenny rightly said, this potential mob mentality of you will enjoy yourself, you will enjoy yourself. If you don't enjoy yourself, we will sort it out and make you enjoy yourself.
The festive period comes with quite a lot of pressures. Maybe not the pressures that John Grisham talks about, really, but that people do feel under pressure, and the sort of a serious side, isn't there? There's a lot of problems with depression and stuff like that. Maybe that's a different thing, as I say. But it's an interesting thing that he's trying to skip Christmas, and people are coming at him from all angles to tell him that he can't skip Christmas. It's the worst thing in the world that he's trying to do, and other family are trying to do, and it's funny from that point.
In terms of collective support, probably the James Stewart movie, which is immediately sort of eluded by the 1946 movie...
It's a
Wonderful Life, thank you. Was so memorable, clearly. But that's something which, again, I thought he was referencing in terms of the collective... Because it was, I mean, dare I say it, hopelessly naive that you'd have these sort of folk who'd actually suddenly all whiz around. I mean, the notion where he borrows, quote-unquote, his neighbour's Christmas tree and sort of works through that to actually cope with the whole thing. It was high farce up to a point, really, but... Yeah, I mean, I think I'm coming around to the fact that I did enjoy it after a fashion, but it was unexpected. And maybe it's the better for that, from that point of view. Jenny, I mean, anything you'd like to add or revise? And why did you select it? Because it was your choice, of course.
It's very hard to know when you get to Christmas whether you want to go ho, ho, ho or bar humbug. And this book does both. And I thought that was really very clever. It's a short book, and we had a short run-in to it, and I wanted to make sure people had a chance to read it. And it's interesting to see that Grisham has written different things. It's nice to introduce his different works. I mean, it's not my favourite standalone. My favourite standalone of his is Playing for Pizza, which is about an American footballer who moves to Italy, and I enjoyed that enormously. But I thought this actually stood up very well. It's worth its reissue, and it's nice to see a different side to this writer.
And yes, very surprising, because it hasn't been adapted, as far as I'm aware, to a screenplay as yet, because I would have thought it's crying out to actually have a sort of special put together, if not by Richard Curtis, then by somebody from that perspective.
I'd pay money to see Hugh Grant sliding off the roof.
Many people would, I believe. So, Rob, let's start doing that, quantifying the unquantifiable, or quantifying the qualitative. What would you actually give John Grisham's Skipping Christmas, the number one bestseller?
Eight.
Okay, eight. Heather?
Seven.
Yeah, I'm going 7.5. Jenny?
I'm going 7.5, because the ending is ambiguous.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. And of course, you know, the medical doctor, the instant... Marion Haste, Repent at Leisure, could be a nightmare. She goes off there, no too many spoilers there, but, you know, it's just an interesting thing in terms of that sequence. I think, really, you've gone off? Is that what John F. Kennedy had in mind when he set up the whole sort of system? No, great stuff there. We... turn the gothic horror module up to full blast with arguably the first official science fiction story, the birth of modern science fiction story, with your next choice, Jenny. It is, of course...
Oh, yes. Mary Shelley's wonderful Frankenstein.
And I believe, Heather, you've already said you're totally familiar with that text.
Yes. I seen the play at the Little Theatre last year. So that was...
So all sorted out for the minute. And Rob, are you ready for It's Alive?
Yeah, I think I've read that a long time ago.
Well, there we are. We'll be revisiting the whole sort of sequence. That'll take us through the festive period. And great news, of course, Jenny, from the point of view of fans of Alex Hastings and Elverman, there will be in 2016 another book in the quadrilogy, pentology, hexology?
Quartet.
Mm.
The Somerset Quartet will come to its conclusion, hopefully in September next year. There is a contract in place. And the last Alex Hastings book in Somerset will hopefully hit the shelves ready for next Christmas.
See what she did there? Last Alex Hastings book in Somerset.
Yes.
I'd like to wish the assembled podcast listeners, and we know they're a growing army of them, well done, everyone. I mean, it's exceptional taste. Don't forget you can also check out some of the other key folk around the country, around the globe, on the podcast as they come up. Would you like to wish them a happy and seasonal holiday package, Jenny?
Absolutely. A very, very Merry Christmas. A good New Year to you all. Thank you for listening. Please keep tuning in. We do know who you are.
Jenny Finch, author, creator of The Drowners and Death of the Elverman, and general Renaissance woman, your host for the Book of the Month.